is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass says the National Guard has not yet arrived in Los Angeles. Up to 2,000 California National Guard troops were federalized by President Trump in response to 2 days of immigration enforcement protests in Los Angeles. But the mayor tells KABC they're not needed.
One of the worst things you can do is have an extreme presence of law enforcement that gets everybody agitated and the violence actually escalates.
She said her message is that violence will not be tolerated. A ban on travel to the U.S. from a number of countries goes into effect tomorrow. The president says these countries do not sufficiently screen citizens, often refuse to take them back, and have a high percentage of people who stay in the U.S. after their visas expire. Severe weather across the South triggering more than 150,000 power outages across Alabama, Georgia, and South Carolina. This is ABC News. Tonight, Broadway's best honored at the Tony Awards, and this year, plays are drawing more attention with big-name film actors nominated, including George Clooney, Sarah Snook, and Bob Odenkirk. A 21-year-old Seattle man's being held on $1 million bail as the accused ringleader in a string of burglaries targeting high-profile athletes. Details from ABC's Alex Stone.
Officials say Earl Riley IV is one of the men seen in video shared by Seattle Seahawks star Richard Sherman in March, and that it's one example of the targeted break-ins. Court documents say Mariners center fielder Julio Rodriguez, pitcher Luis Castillo, and Cy Young Award winner Blake Snell are all victims. Hundreds of thousands worth of goods stolen from them.
Kentucky Derby winner Sovereignty held off Preakness winner Journalism to win the Belmont Stakes, the third leg of Thoroughbred Racing's Triple Crown. There was no Triple Crown on the line because Sovereignty's connections opted to skip the Preakness. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Summer. It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells area or an escape to Door County. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store. Then listen in for the keywords during the 7 and 11 a.m. hour and 2 and 4 p.m. hour. Text in the keyword and get set to win. It's Civic Media's Scotty Summer.
Summers in Worthington, Minnesota bring fun, and a good portion of that fun happens around our beautiful 800-acre Lake Okabena. Our community is built around it, and it has great walleye fishing and several lakeside parks. This June 13th and 14th, we'll have our Windsurfing Regatta and Music Festival. It's free. Come and see the windsurfers, eat from over a dozen food vendors, and attend free lakeside concerts on our professional city stage, this year featuring Viva Knievel and Cooper Allen. Check us out. We're Worthington, Minnesota, and we're certainly worth a look.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. As federal electric vehicle incentives face potential rollbacks, a new study is highlighting the burden of gasoline costs on Black and Latino drivers. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
The Fuel Equity Report shows Blacks and Latinos are super users of gasoline, spending on average 15% of their paycheck to fuel their cars. The median household income for Blacks and Latinos in Wisconsin is between $31,000 and $46,000. Dr. Shelley Francis with EV Hybrid Noir says systemic factors like disinvestment in public transportation, economic segregation, and long commute times all contribute to the disproportionate impact.
They're also more likely on average to be driving these older, less fuel efficient cars due to income as well as financing barriers that they may experience.
The study says EV adoption could save Blacks and Latinos an average of $4,900 a year on fuel and maintenance, but barriers like affordability, charging access, and education persist. The report found the top 10% of Black and Latino gasoline users are generally concentrated in smaller cities and rural areas. The study suggests targeted policies to encourage equitable adoption of EV for Black and Latino communities, including enhancing purchase incentives, expanding financing options, and increasing charging infrastructure in communities where top gasoline users live. Francis says addressing the big misinformation gap about EVs is also crucial.
pushing more of those types of stories out there to show like the everyday driver. It's not some fancy person living out in a castle somewhere. It's just regular folks who are trying to work, make ends meet, and provide for their families.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
More news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Some showers and thunderstorms developing for today. Some areas of smoke as well. Our winds turning to the northwest, and they'll be a little gusty. High temperatures warming to the middle 70s. For tonight, any rain comes to an end. Lows in the upper 40s to near 50. It's 57 at our studios.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 p.m., I'll be joined with UW-Wisconsin Law School Professor Aaron Barbato to talk about immigration processes. We dispel myths and give you the real scoop.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
You're listening to the best of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade, Distant Thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national and local Native American news and events. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up!
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he didn't cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. Hey, Kadigiwi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and Native news and events. And as you know, he knew, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
That's right, Jaji. This portion of the show is supported by Native Roots Trading Post. Shop now at cause-cart.shop.com. And search Native Roots to find your resist gear. Kinigigi for everyone, for all your support.
Yeah, and we're coming up on the state fair and all those things, Jaleesa, and we're getting all ready to do it and getting our candles fired up and get everything going here for Dayton's and the state fair. And you guys can buy things now if you jump on that website. Hoo-wah. Hey, we have our friend Robert Lilligren on, and Robert, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And it's always a pleasure to have you on. And I got to see you earlier today, Robert. Welcome.
Yeah, bonjour, Jaleesa. Bonjour, Robert. It's great to be here. It was great to see you in person at the Four Sisters Farmers Market, for sure.
Lots of people, lots of things happening. The vendors, a great vibe. I look forward to it every Wednesday.
Yeah, and I know you're a regular attendee, and it's always so good to see you there. And this was the first Four Sisters Farmers Market of the season. I invite everyone to stop on down to the market. It's at on the American Indian Cultural Corridor, East Franklin Avenue at 15th, right in our parking lot. And I got to tell you, I agree with you. The vibe was so good. You know, this was the first of the season, but it didn't feel that way at all. It just felt really established. The crowd was really impressive. And the vendor selection, and the variety was really powerful. So I credit our Four Sisters Farmers Market Manager Destiny Jones and her assistant Mamegwa, who just really, and the whole staff, really dedicated to making it an event. It's kind of like the place to see and be seen on the American Indian Cultural Corridor every Thursday.
It sure is, and I'd be remiss not to mention that Destiny is Ho-Chunk, Ho-Wa, a citizen.
I should have said that myself. My apologies.
No, you know, I always try to sneak that in there. Hey, exciting. I'd like to talk a little bit about Well, I want to talk a little bit about what you used to do here in the city of Minneapolis as a city council member, and talk a little bit about sanctuary states and kind of what happened a few days ago here.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah. So I was the first Native person elected to the Minneapolis City Council back in 2001. And so maybe jump forward to what happened here this week, which was just shocking and disturbing. And there was a in Minneapolis, there's Franklin Avenue, East Franklin, which is the segment of that is the American Indian Culture Corridor. And then just about 10 blocks south of that is another major east-west artery that connects the lakes, Bede-Mikaska to the Mississippi River. And there was a major police action, very militaristic law enforcement action led by federal agents, ICE, people with ICE insignias and other federal agents, armored cars, tactical gear, masks, so you couldn't see their faces. I mean, in my opinion, it was a total effort to intimidate the community. This is the heart of the immigrant community, predominantly Latino and East African folks who are already a little on edge. And we're still kind of figuring out what actually happened. Allegedly, it was a law enforcement action related to national drug and human trafficking rings. But it just felt weird. And the community responded quickly. Demonstrators showed up. There was a lot of confrontation between community and the police. And then the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office was involved, which the optics of that are terrible. And then the Minneapolis Police were involved to do crowd control. And but the optics, again, they're right there then, right? And the officers, the police chief is walking down East Lake Street towards the action, and it was just bad all around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the reason why I brought up your past being a city council member is that, you know, I feel like, and this is just my opinion, I don't have anything to base this on, but, you know, Kristi Noem, who's the head of ICE, is going after sanctuary states, or cities, I should say.
Right, and cities and about states, this. Right? Yeah. So while I was on the Minneapolis City Council, I was on from 2001 to 2014, and that's when we passed our first sanctuary city ordinance. We didn't call it that. It was much more focused as an employer, right, of the police and others who might be called on to support federal immigration actions. And it was a typical unfunded mandate. We were supposed to do this work, but there weren't any resources following the mandate. And it just really did not jibe with our values here. So I'm trying to remember what the name of it was. I'm sure I wasn't an author on it. It was something like our workforce directive toward federal immigration enforcement or something like that. And George W. Bush was president. Tim Pawlenty, another Republican, was our governor.
Oh, boo again.
Right. And they were hostile to cities because they were viewed as bastions of Democratic voters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they were turning off the tap of resources and support. These unfunded mandates were just flying at us. And I just made this point at a Met Council meeting just last night. Was it last night or Monday at a committee meeting that the 12 years I was on the Minneapolis City Council, every one of those years was a budget cutting year because the state and the federal government were so hostile to cities. And so the federal government tried to pass this mandate that our local law enforcement was supposed to help with federal immigration enforcement. We just said no and passed this ordinance. And again, the buzzword back then was sanctuary city, and it had a real negative vibe. So we didn't call it a sanctuary city. Now, city ordinance, now they use that term all the time. But it was a strong statement by the city of Minneapolis that we're not playing this game.
Wow. You mentioned all these groups, and I was writing these down. We talked a little bit about yesterday, but what the heck is the Coast Guard doing there? Is this a test of really shaking people down? And are neighbors rose. Somebody saw it on, Read It, and they came down there and tried to protect those people. It's just, it was crazy because I had two laptops opening and I was watching a bunch of live feeds, and it was insane.
It was totally insane. And I was in the office, I'm in the conference room doing some work, yeah. And a lot of Enacti staff is watching the feeds, and I mean, you could just hear the sound of the crowds. The response from our NACTI staff was almost like they were watching a prize fight or something, you know, and yeah. They're like, oh, punches are, you know, fists are flying. And, right. And so the community stepped up to intervene.
Yes.
And to your point of who was there and what it was really about. If you're serving search warrants, legitimate, authentic search warrants related to drug or human trafficking, you don't need armored cars. You don't need federal authorities in tactical gear, right? I mean, this is serving search warrants is a fairly routine activity in law enforcement. This was 100% intimidation. Our county attorney here in Hennepin County has called it terrorism, and I don't think she's wrong. And so it's all about intimidating the local community.
Well, I'm here with Robert Lilligren and Jaleesa McKee, and I'm Robert Pilot, and this is Native Roots Radio. Hey, Jaleesa, we're going to be right back, and we usually say, stay with us. So, hey, we're going to be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
Right.
Stay with us?
Stay with us.
Right on.
News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, backed by Donald Trump, that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, and this portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Yes, they do. Thank you there, Hinu, and Jaleesa's sitting in here, and just really great to have you on, Jaleesa. And Jaleesa, before we get it with Robert, you're an actor, and you're chip off the old block. I was a high school teacher, so I had to act all the time. Oh, wow.
yes, I've been doing that more in the film, short film realm lately. And then, you know, as you know, I've done plays as well. Shout out to New Native Theater.
Absolutely. And thanks for being on. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren. And Robert, before I always have to honor Wendy, and Wendy always says, ask Robert what he wants to talk about. But at first, before I do that, I want to just bring up because we always have fun because we talk national, local, native politics, which is human. Everything involves us and then some. But Elon Musk is going crazy on his platform, and help us with this.
Well, I don't know if I can help you, and I wouldn't necessarily describe it as going crazy. I think that's, he was right, pretty much already there, right? Yes. But there's this huge rift now between Musk and Trump. So predictable, right? Everyone that's in Trump's inner circle ends up being ostracized at some point. But Musk has just gone full scorched earth, right? He's criticizing the big, beautiful bill. He's, he's saying that Trump should be impeached, which is extreme. You know, Trump's retaliating, saying we should cancel all of Musk's company's contracts with the federal government. You know, and that'd so it's major rip. And although this is a horrible time for any of us who care about democracy in this country, there's a little bit of satisfaction watching this total meltdown on both sides.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's enough nationally that we need to talk about. So locally, you're talking about the Met Council, but also I know there's more things happening with Native American Community Development Institute, too.
There is a lot going on. And so this is kind of the height of our programming season. And so for folks who aren't that familiar with NACD or Native American Community Development Institute, we're technically an asset-based community development organization working in the local Native community, but we're engaged in statewide and regional and national efforts as well. And we're fundamentally change agents, right? And so very engaged in the established system with the efforts to make it more reflective of Native voices, more serving of Native people and communities. And we cluster our work in three areas: arts and culture, food sovereignty, and civic engagement or democratic engagement. And in each of those right now, we're kind of at our peak programming. So it's a busy time for our organization. And then another thing that we're doing, and I'd love to talk a little bit about this, is we're very collaborative, right? We're parts of lots of collaborative partnerships and cohorts and things. And as I always like to say, partnerships are hard, and they take effort, and they take deliberate action, and they take good intent, right? And so one of the collaborations that we're part of right now that's in kind of full swing is called the Good Relatives Collaborative. Good Relatives Collaborative. Great website. I invite anyone to Google it and look at it. And it's a partnership between organizations in three organizations, one in North Dakota, one in South Dakota, one in Minnesota. And NACD is the Minnesota partner. And then the funding partner is the Bush Foundation, one of our largest and most prominent philanthropic presences here in the state. And I think their mission is something like they power good ideas and the people who move them or something. And it's in the Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and the Native nations within those boundaries. So this is really a cool collaborative, the Good Relatives Collaborative. It's founded an enlightened approach from Bush that Native people should be the ones granting funds to Native people. Yes. So a very visionary leader within their organization, Eileen Briggs, has been spearheading these kinds of efforts. And so this Good Relatives Collaborative is charged with kind of filling the gaps where philanthropy hasn't been reaching Native people, and really geographically filling those gaps. They grant, I should know the amount. I think it's somewhere between $2 to $3 million to organizations and individuals. There's a grant period that is open right now. I'm wondering. I think that just closed. But then they also administer what's called the Bush Native Prize, which is a considerable transformational grant program to Native organizations. And so it's trying to make the philanthropic system a little more reflective of Native presence. And over my time working in the nonprofit world, which is like maybe the last 10 years, data has really surfaced that show how meager philanthropy's giving to Native people and Native orgs has been historically. I mean, it's something like 0.01% or something like that. Doesn't even reflect the numbers of the population. And, you know, smart or enlightened foundations are trying to do better.
Yeah.
And I really feel fortunate and privileged that NACD, our org, is right in kind of the sweet spot of that conversation between the nonprofit world and the philanthropic world about how to do better.
Right. I believe that grant ends June 16th, so there's still time. I know I've been working with some people, and it's exciting because I think one of the key things you said, Robert, and you've been around a while, is that natives are selecting natives as opposed to outside people that don't know our community.
Yeah, that is exactly right. I think that's the Native Bush Prize that's open till the 16th, right? Or is the whole... Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I'd encourage people to look at it, and you're exactly right. And it's a learning experience, right? This is kind of new territory. And one of the things that we are learning, we're in what, fifth or sixth month of a 3-year commitment to participate in the Good Relatives Collaborative. And we do a lot, all of the partners within the collaborative do a lot of coaching of applicants and potential applicants, because not everybody in the community speaks sort of the philanthropic language or the language
or grant making.
Right. One of our brilliant Vice President of Development in ACTI, John Williams,
yes,
had the observation that in the way natives tell stories, it's counter to what philanthropy is looking for when you're describing your idea or your project. And so he's done a lot of coaching, as have others, to sort of reorganize the story and better support these applications. But I'm arm's length removed. John Williams in our office, Alex Buffalohead in our office are really the ones at the table. But it's just NACTI's presence there has been really positive. We weren't the first Minnesota partner. We got recruited after, I think, the first year or so. And it's just, it's so cool to see, because we're the city partner, right? And we have connections out into the more rural areas. The other two are much more rural based, South Dakota and the North Dakota one. And so it's just a nice balance, and everyone brings their gifts. Everyone brings good spirit, good heart. Everyone's trying to be a good relative, right?
I mean, right. And I think one of the things that's really positive in my experience with grants is that there's so much help, you know, with John and Alex and the other people that are, that's what they're there to make you successful. And that hasn't always been my experience with grants over the years.
Right. I think that's a really great observation, Robert. And, you know, and here especially, well, not here especially, everywhere in Indian country, but here, because I've, you know, been kind of part of it, is we have been very deliberate about stepping away from the settler colonizer framework that encourages Native orgs to view each other as competitors, right?
Right.
We're competing for funds, we're competing for service populations. And instead, we really tried to embrace a more indigenized way of working together collaboratively to bring the maximum amount of resources to support our relatives in the community. And it's not just here, it's happening all over, but I can see the success here in doing that. It has not been easy.
Right.
You know, I'm really proud of the community here for moving in this way. And I feel like that experience, or that kind of almost like recalibration of our approach, is something that we bring into the Good Relatives Collaborative.
That's exciting. And I just got to give you a shout out, Robert. You know, thank you so much for spreading that news to our community. It's so important. And working together, I can see it with my own two eyes. I'm around a lot and I see the communities working together, and it always hasn't been that way. And I believe you're one of the people that have really made that an issue and a really a win-win situation for our nonprofits and our other Native community members.
You're very kind, Miigwech. You give me way too much credit.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Thank you so much, Robert, for being on. And we'll see you next week. And I'll definitely see you at the Four Sisters Farmers Market next week. Oh, wow.
Right on.
Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break. Ho-wa.
Stay with us.
Right on.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass says the National Guard has not yet arrived in Los Angeles. Up to 2,000 California National Guard troops were federalized by President Trump in response to 2 days of immigration enforcement protests in Los Angeles. But the mayor tells KABC they're not needed.
One of the worst things you can do is have an extreme presence of law enforcement that gets everybody agitated and the violence actually escalates.
She said her message is that violence will not be tolerated. A ban on travel to the U.S. from a number of countries goes into effect tomorrow. The president says these countries do not sufficiently screen citizens, often refuse to take them back, and have a high percentage of people who stay in the U.S. after their visas expire. Severe weather across the South triggering more than 150,000 power outages across Alabama, Georgia, and South Carolina. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Brewers at home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field with the Brewers and the Padres wrapping up their three-game set today. Last night, the game tied at 3-3, bottom of the ninth, and rookie Caleb Durbin at the plate on FanDuel Wisconsin. A walk-off home run and the Brewers winning 4-3. It was Durbin's first career home run in the majors.
You know, obviously a little bit more special. You're running around the bases, the lights are flickering on and off. You just hit a walk-off home run. You know, in the big leagues, it's a you know, really cool feeling, and my teammates were going crazy, so, you know, they're awesome for that.
Tomorrow night, the Brewers begin a series hosting the Atlanta Braves. NFL, Packers minicamp is this week in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers' one-year deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers is for $13.6 million. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Some showers and thunderstorms developing for today. Some areas of smoke as well. Our winds turning to the northwest, and they'll be a little gusty. High temperatures warming to the middle 70s. For tonight, any rain comes to an end. Lows in the upper 40s to near 50. Right now, it's 55.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, backed by Donald Trump, that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
All right, time to visit with Melissa Baldoff as we talk climate issues. Acting FEMA chief told staff he didn't know about U.S. hurricane seasons.
What?
Speechless too.
I mean,
I love it. We're all just sitting here like, what?
If it is a joke, and I don't know that it is, it's not a funny one. We've seen more deadly hurricanes, so we have every reason to expect it will be a bad hurricane season.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Lily Roberts, she is from the Center for American Progress Action Fund.
They're trying to pretend that this bill would be good for the working class because of this really small carve out to our tax laws. The no tax on tips piece does not at all even come close to addressing the problem of wages in this country. You know, a third of workers who work for tips in the first place don't make enough money to pay taxes at all.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, oil and gas industry expert Matt Randolph, also known as Mr. Global, will be here to talk about all things energy in Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, this portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACDI, in Minneapolis. Shout out to Robert, who was just on the show.
Right on. Hey, we have our friend Kami Western on, who is Program and Project Coordinator. And Kami, you're going to have to help me here. I'm going to say Owamini Omini Okoja Yapi. Please say I was close.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's pretty close.
Welcome back on. I don't speak Ho-Chunk very well either, but thank you for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Hey, you know, we got some things coming up here with you as Program and Project Coordinator. I know there's a big happenings coming soon here this month.
Yeah, we're pretty excited. Summer is coming up pretty soon. This spring season has been filled with our public tours that we're having once a month. It's the first Saturday of every month with Barry Hand. So we do have a link on our website if anyone wants to join those. And they're pretty educational. They're pretty fun. He makes it fun to listen and to listen to him. And yeah, they're pretty good. Other events we're having right now, we are in the middle of the One Mississippi, Mississippi River Days. So that's from June 1st to June 15th. And it's just us, Owamini Omini Okoja Yapi, partnering with like 75 other orgs along the Mississippi River and kind of seeing what we can do to help all the issues along the river.
And there are a lot. Talk to our audience that may be listening for the first time a little bit about the organization and how it came about. And it's really a great story.
Yeah. So we used to be called Friends of the Falls, and it was really a group effort of a lot of individuals kind of helping rename the area to Owamini Omini. Our org is called Owamini Omini Okoja Yapi, which basically means Friends of the Falls. And it's the St. Anthony Falls right there in downtown Minneapolis. And our work is partnering with a lot of people in the cities, including the Park Board, the City of Minneapolis, and other orgs to help bring back Dakota presence to the area, helping Dakota people feel at home, and just really helping others understand the significance of the area, the importance of the site and all the sacred sacred sites for the people there.
Yeah, a lot of them, it's been kind of messed up over the years, but you guys are taking control of that area down there, which is awesome. And it's a spiritual area for the Dakotas. And it's great that I guess the city's kind of given it to you, right?
Yeah. So before all the industrialism and the colonization and all the I like to call like the concrete jungle area, before all that came around, the flour mills and all that, it was a place of significance, really sacred to us. And it was a place where like women would go to give birth or to offer prayers whenever they're pregnant and all that. So that area is still there, very destroyed, very much destroyed. It's not a very pretty place to look at right now. So our efforts are to turn it back into a place where people can go. So a long time ago, it was called Witawanahi, which is the Spirit Island. And it's just right there. You can still see parts of it, remnants of it. It was destroyed whenever they built all the mills and all that. So,
right, and they dammed it up, and they've done with the dredging and all those things over the years. So, how can people find out more about the organization and where it is exactly? And then also with the tours, where can they go to get that info?
Yeah, they can follow us on social media or go straight to our website, which is owamniomni.org. And the tours are set up, like I said, once a month. Those are for public tours for anybody that wants to sign up for those. There are a lot of like passerbyers that end up just kind of joining the tours whenever Barry's out there. So that's always good, too, if you just happen to be out there one of those Saturdays. then yeah, you can join there. If you do need like a private tour for your group or a team that you work with, you can always reach out to any of us and we can set that up with you.
I love history and I love Minnesota history. What's one of the most surprising things about that area that you came across that kind of surprised you?
Probably just that story of the Witawanagi, the Spirit Island, because it wasn't just for women, but we have there's tons of stories, but one of the things I heard was that the Unchechi, which is like the I don't know how to translate that. It's like the monsters, the Unchechi, yeah. Around there. That's where they came when they were in mating season. To those waters too. So it's kind of for our two-legged, which is us, and then those Unchechi would go there to mate. So it's kind of a significant area all around.
Right. Hey, you know, we have an upcoming event called Indian Victory Day that's going to be June 25th. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So to be more specific, it's the Victory Day for the Battle of Little Bighorn that happened in 1876.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's when, you know, General Custer, George Custer, and his 7th Cavalry went down at the hands of Lakota, Cheyenne, and Arapaho. And so we wanted to commemorate that and the triumph of our relatives and kind of bring that over here. We have a lot of Lakota relatives in the cities also in the area. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we're all part of the Ocheti Shakoe, the Dakota, Lakota, and Nakota nations. So we wanted to bring that over. That'll be on June 25th around 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. There's going to be singers, a drum group, different speakers from Owamni, Omni, Okoreapi, along with the community, and Trickster Tacos will also be there.
Oh, I love Trickster Tacos. Matter of fact, the person that owns Trickster Tacos, there we go, is a former student of mine. So that's, I always love seeing this couple running around with their truck, and they're really blowing up the last few years. So that's really cool. One of the things too about people called it Custer's Last Stand, but is that's the only time that the United States has lost a battle like that. And the believe Lakota, Dakota still have the flag that they got.
So a lot of times the story I heard anyway, I know everyone has different teachings, but the story I heard was that the flag was captured after the battle was won. So that's why we raised the United States flag, because it's ours. We're the only nations to ever defeat the United States government and the military. So,
yes. Wait, I got to push the applause button here. So, Jaleesa, you're listening in. Is there anything I missed? This sounds pretty exciting. A lot of things happening down by the Mississippi River. And, you know, we travel up and down the Mississippi River with our pontoon.
We sure do. Singing karaoke.
Yes.
No, it's wonderful to hear everything. And just, I'm honored to hear all this and be reminded of the sacredness of those areas. So thank you.
Yeah. And so what else is going on? I know that's really important. That's coming up, and every Saturday. I just think that this is a form of land back. And I think we talked a little bit about this last time when you were on, and it comes in different forms and different meanings, but this is literally land back.
It is. And just being able to have that presence again. I think Dakota people were really pushed out whenever Westerners came and took over and built the cities and all the mills, then just created Minneapolis and St. Paul in general. You know, Minnesota really has a, I don't want to say problem, but like has an issue with really pushing down Dakota people. And so this is a form of land back, of bringing our visibility back. And we're not invisible people. We're still here. One day I'd like to see, you know, Dakota language all over the place in our site. And we kind of have that right now with our signs, our interpretive signs. I talked about that last time where you can go and you can scan the QR codes on those signs and you can hear Dakota language telling the history and the story of the site. And so we're going to be putting up new signs here pretty soon on the west side of the river. Oh, no, that's the east side. Sorry. On the Father Hennepin Park side of the bridge, of Stone Ridge Bridge, because of the construction that they're doing right now that's on our site. So,
yeah. Talk about that again for people that are just tuning in. That's really, really exciting that you can pretty much scan something and you'll be able to hear the history. Could you talk a little bit
about that? Yeah, we have a lot of Dakota speakers that we partnered with, and they tell the history of the area and what's forthcoming and what's going to be there pretty soon. So in the next few years, as our work progresses, those signs, they have the written language on there and the story that you can read, and also whenever you scan it.
Exactly. Do you know, and this is an issue too, I believe, Bedote means what, two waters merging, or and there's Bedote Island out there that was very sacred too. I hope someday that Lakota Dakotas can reclaim that and at least let people know the history of that. And I believe what's really part of Land Back with you guys is that you're giving the history that hasn't been taught. And we talk about that a lot.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know the history at all of Dakota people there. A lot of people, you know, we see a lot of natives around the cities. But I think for non-native people, they see a native and they just think, you know, all natives are one people, one language,
right.
And they don't realize that there's a mix of Native American, indigenous people, and we all have our own languages, our own cultures, our own history, our own beliefs. For example, you know, Ojibwe people have their own story to the area, mm-hmm. You know, that's significant to them. And just like Dakota people, we have our own story there too. So.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, give more information here. So we're going to break to a commercial, and we appreciate you coming on and talking about this. It's really eye-opening and a great work that your organization's doing. So could you give the website and the information?
Oh, yeah, I was like, yeah. I was waiting for something. Yeah, so it's owamineyomine.org, and we are Owamineyomine Okodayapi on Facebook. So you can find all your information there. We try to keep up with our social media posts so you can see like what's happening, when the tours are, and like just little educational pieces that we like to put out there. So, but our website's a great place if you need more information or need to contact.
Right on. Hey, thanks for coming on, Kami Weston, and looking forward to seeing you again. This has been Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Pinagigi, stay with us.
Oh.
News from the center, WRCE.
I love a day on the water with friends, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis sometimes holds me back. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy.
Teaching music is my passion, but my active psoriatic arthritis can limit me at times. Now I'm treating my joint symptoms with Skyrizi.
With Skyrizi, most people with plaque psoriasis saw 90% clearer skin at 4 months.
Or if you are an adult with active psoriatic arthritis, Skyrizi helps you move with less joint pain, stiffness, swelling, and fatigue.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
There's nothing like clearer skin.
There's nothing like better movement, and that means everything. Nothing is everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, this portion's brought to you by Howling for Wolves. We are Howling for Wolves right now. Ho!
Ooh.
Yeah. Hey, we wanted to keep you on here just to real quick and make sure that we got all the information that you wanted to get out today. So welcome back. Welcome back. So is there everything you'd like to talk about?
I think so. I think we touched base on a lot of it. You know, just to recap, we have our Chacha Wakba, which is our word for the Mississippi River, where communities and all the other orgs come together. And so June 2nd was actually the first ever National Mississippi River Day. Wow. It just recognizes the river as a vital unifying force, and brainstorming and looking for ways to sustain the economy, the ecosystems, and the way of life along the river. Like I said, we're just one of 75 orgs that participate in it, and it goes through the River Days of Action, actually goes until the 15th. So there's that. If you want more info on that, you can always go to the MississippiRiver.org /River Days of Action. For other events. And we're not hosting an event this year, but hopefully next year would be a good time for us.
You know what's interesting, and I don't know if you know this, Jaleesa, either, but I just found this out. So in the 20s, there were only, I believe it was 1932, they counted only three fish that were alive from St. Paul and Minneapolis on the Mississippi River. And that is directly has to do with what was being pumped into the river. And I never knew that. I just knew it was a bad, bad place to swim when I was young. And again, that was, you know, when I was young was 50 years ago. So it's cleaned up a lot. And I think that's one thing that I really appreciate, that, you know, I can put my foot in the river and I can see my foot, you know, in the lake shore or in the shoreline. And I couldn't do that when I was younger. So good things are happening, and water is life.
Yeah. Water is life. And it's really eye-opening to see the progression of, you know, back then to now. And, you know, we're still working. We're still putting in the effort to make it even better for future generations.
Yes, and that's so important. And I think closing the lock and dam was a good start, because invasive fish can't get up any further. And so there's all these things. I wanted to say a big thank you so much for being on. It really means a lot. And Barry's an old friend of mine, and it's great to hear good things that he's doing again, and great things that you're doing. So, and the organization, again, one more time, how people can check you guys out online. And
yeah, thank you so much. You know, we love Barry. I love learning from him. He has a lot of history in his brain, so I'm soaking it all up and get to share it with others. So, but yeah, you can visit our website at owamniyomini.org or owamniyomini.org/owamniyomini okoreyapi on Facebook and other social media pages.
Yeah, a big pinigi. Thanks for being on, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you, Pilamea, for having me.
Right on. Hey, wow, that was awesome, Jaleesa. I just wanted to talk to you real quick too before we end the show, and it's fun. When we started, I always talk about when Wendy gets on the show that she was a founder of the show, you know, and so are you, of Native Roots Radio 9 years ago.
Well, you've always been our fearless and admirable leader, Josh. But yeah, you're right. We all were together in the very beginning.
Yeah, and it was because of Standing Rock and all the misinformation that was going out there. I remember our first show, we had no commercials, so we were on the whole hour, and you were doing live reads. Do you remember that?
I sure do. I remember having
a little trauma.
Computer. Yeah. You know, it was great, but it was just such a funny, you know, we were figuring things out, right? So, like, I just remember, like, you know, almost like whispering and wording things to each other, and, you know, just, you know, a little bit of stress, but in a good way. I think we had so much fun.
Well, and I really believe, like, you should be proud of where the show has been, and it's great to have you on, because you're a big part of the beginning of this.
Oh, thanks, Judge. Yeah. And it's so fun to just be back on here. And, just the growth that has happened and all the amazing guests you have on here. I mean, I think like some of the best leaders are those that bring on the experts in different elements and different ways. Right. So, and that's what you do.
Yeah. Well, you know me, I'm not an expert on anything, so it's great. We've learned so much. We've learned so much over the years. Like from Wendy, and you just hear Robert Lilligren today, and then the former Friends of the Mississippi and what's happening there and how that's indigenized. That's just an example of what comes across our microphone and our guest list. We are blessed with all these great guests.
Yes, absolutely. It's so great to see and hear. And you know, when I tell people about the show, it's just so easy to put out there, because it's like, hey, there's politicians to advocates to artists to you name it. And it really creates this space, this Native centric space that we all, I think more and more people are becoming aware of it, even not, you know, Indigenous or Native people. And they really want to know what's going on, and they really want to know how to support and how to, and it's just great to have a space for our people.
Yeah. And again, I learned so much, whether it's about the wolves or whether it's about, you know, what's happening on the Native corridor here in the Twin Cities, you know. So
right.
I'm truly blessed. And again, I can't, that was you, me, Uncle Curtis, and Wendy that started this whole mess.
Yes. And you're right. I love that you bring up that Standing Rock was a big motivator to get mm-hmm. this rolling. I know you had a dream about doing this, yeah. You know, how, was it in your childhood? Did you say, Josh? You've always wanted to do radio, and, right. And it's so cool how Creator will put it in your path. It's like, you don't necessarily know how or when you dream a dream, but then, you know, this was purposeful.
Yeah, and it's a unique show that it's on 5 days a week, and it there isn't anything like that across the whole nation, all across Turtle Island, and we're blessed. I've been in Washington, D.C. with my other job and run into people that know me because of the radio show, and mm-hmm. you know, at first it's like, well, how many people are listening to this? And I remember when we left and the producer said, well, 20,000 people just heard that and went, oh, God. Wow. I remember that.
So amazing. So incredible. It's humbling, too.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Right? And, right?
Yeah. And I know you run into people, too, that that know me and or have heard of the show, I should say. It's like, oh, wow. You know, putting two and two together with our small community.
I say this in a humbling way, but I get to brag that, you know, you're my dad, you're my Jaji. So, our Native community is small. And then, you know, if I even mention, my dad has a radio show, it's Native centric. It's, you know, doing this, you know, that's all I have to say. And they say, what? You know, so it's just really cool to see that. And then, of course, you know, we have our Native Roots Trading Post that, you know, just was... I don't want to say a spinoff. What is it? You know, just you were inspired based on, you know, just meeting all these different artists, right? So
yes, and it was a need, you know, to get Native art out there in a good way. Hey, Jaleesa, thanks so much. This was a great show, and it's great to see you back on. And I got to see the whole family today, so it's amazing.
Next time I'll bring the babies on.
Yeah. Well, Senator Kunish does too, because she watches her grandbabies. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we're signing off. We'll see you tomorrow. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE, T. Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome from the show Young Sheldon, actor Lance Barber, and we'll talk about the amazing career and life of Michael J. Fox. We are going to light it like it's Monday.
Nightlight with T. Schwaba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Summer.
It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells area or an escape to Door County. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store. Then listen in for the keywords during the 7 and 11 a.m. hour and 2 and 4 p.m. hour. Text in the keyword and get set to win. It's Civic Media's Scotty Summer. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Photos and video show the California National Guard arriving in Los Angeles. They were deployed by President Trump over the objections of Governor Gavin Newsom after 2 days of clashes between demonstrators and federal immigration authorities. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass told KABC.
I don't see how that is productive at all. I think what needs to happen is that our city needs to regain control.
Up to 2,000 members were deployed. The president's ban on travel goes into effect at midnight. There are full restrictions on entry from 12 countries, partial restrictions for 7 others. Russia and Ukraine failed to complete a planned exchange of dead soldiers Sunday, each side accusing the other of scuttling the plans. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Zelensky urging for new sanctions against Russia as attacks on Ukraine continue. After Coco Gauff became the first American to win the French Open in 10 years, the men's final